Welcome to Food Bites with Sarah Patterson and Kevin Hillier. Proudly brought to you by Cheese Links, bringing cheese and yogurt making to your kitchen. Cheeselinks.com.au.
Oh, it's party time. It's Food Bites with Sarah Patterson time. Hello, Sarah Patterson.
Oh, hello, Kevin Hillier. Lovely to be in your company again.
I feel a bit of sort of spring in the step there because, you know, things are starting to get a little bit closer to normal again.
I feel like we're slowly progressing towards our new kind of normal,
Whatever that may be. And a very, very normal edition of Food Bites coming up with thanks to our friends at Cheese Links because we have a terrific guest. He's a beauty.
I'm so thrilled about this because I'm a big fan. So is my mother, actually.
Oh, actually, I'll tell you now, I don't know anyone who isn't a fan of this bloke, even if he didn't like the show he was on.
Yep.
He was a very, very likable bloke, and as you'll find out, he is a very likable bloke. His name is Gary Megan.
Gary Megan, former MasterChef judge, but doing all sorts of different things now, so we'll catch up and see what he's up to.
He's got a podcast, he's got a new television show, and he's got a lot to talk about, and we're gonna have a chat with him very, very soon here on Food Bites. So thanks to Cheese Links. Don't forget the Cheese Links website, cheeselinks.com.au, the Facebook page, the Instagram page, and that all-important telephone number is 52821984.
03 outside the Melbourne metro area. Kevin.
All right, Janet is ready to take your call. If you want a cheese workshop, they're getting all those details. It's all up there on the website so you can get all the details.
And cheese making equipment. Jan will look after you for all your cheese making needs. It's a very satisfying pursuit making your own cheese, and we are living proof.
Yep. You think you're a fair dinkum smart aleck.
I make the best halloumi this side and of you the are. Black Stump.
Now, before we get to Gary Megan and have a talk about MasterChef and his new podcast and all those things, well, it's not a new podcast, but the podcast he's doing, let's get to our Friday food poll.
And because it's winter and it's a bit crisp out there and we need to warm up first thing in the morning, this week's Friday food poll is we're debating the merits of raisin toast versus sourdough toast. Can I just say straight off the bat, I'm not a fan of raisin toast. I don't like anything small and dried in the area of fruit.
How do I get through the net then?
Stop. Oh,
seriously.
I don't like raisins.
Oh.
But having said that, I love the smell of anyone who's cooking raisin toast, the smell of fresh fruit, cinnamon, and you get a whiff of it and it's just very appealing. Then again, I love sourdough.
Oh, I adore sourdough.
With a nice poached egg.
Now, I adore sourdough as I buy it at my local bread shop because they do a very good sourdough, and I've eaten a lot of good sourdough. I've also eaten a lot of very ordinary sourdough. But sourdough has become the thing that everyone's had a crack at during the lockdown.
Yep.
Everyone's decided, I'll jump on the sourdough. In fact, our guest is one of those people. So let's find out, is it raisin toast or is it sourdough? Marcus kicks us off saying, oddly enough, I'm having a go at making sourdough raisin this weekend.
Hey, that would work.
Yeah, it would work. Yeah, it would.
Lee says he loves both, but sourdough is more versatile. That is true. Complements a hot brekkie, open sandwich, sharing plate, and even upscales a simple soup. It certainly does.
I use sourdough in spaghetti bolognese. Instead of the pasta, because I prefer it.
Instead of spaghetti, you do too.
Yeah, I do. Muriel says raisin toast, a rare treat. I love it. Lots of butter, please.
Oh, and nice and thick, that cafe-style raisin toast. Mm. Yeah, I can picture that. Rebecca says sourdough. She hates raisins in anything. I'm with you, Beck.
Fair enough. Thick raisin toast with butter for me, Pato, says Glenn.
Rachel, definitely sourdough. Anne-Marie says raisin toast with real butter melted in sugar and cinnamon.
Oh, wow. Lauren says raisin toast. Evelyn says sourdough raisin toast. We're inventing a new thing here. Kim says depends on if you're putting Vegemite on it. Well, then it'd have to be sourdough. Petrina says raisin with crunchy peanut butter.
Oh, I wouldn't have thought of that. Be interesting.
Oh, okay. No, I don't know about that.
That's Annie, it. Raisin
very
toast
Elvis
with
of you,
butter.
Petrina. sourdough yum, says Joylene. Patricia says sourdough, please. Anne Lee says raisin toast. Kathy says raisin toast. Charlene says raisin toast.
Steve, our producer, he says producer's note. Raisin toast, that is all.
Oh, okay. No correspondence to be entered into.
And his wife, Kathy, agrees with him on that.
Silvana says raisin toast. Marie says raisin. Elizabeth says both. Deb says both.
Artie says, well, both have a place in my heart and the gap slightly below it. Sourdough is an anytime. And I like a bit of cafe-style toasted raisin bread with a little something spread on it at night with a coffee. Definitely use butter, not margarine. That's an ongoing theme, isn't it?
Kerry likes both, especially when they're homemade. If I had to choose, it would be sourdough with butter, cream cheese and homegrown tomatoes. Oh, yum.
And Stephen, both but amazing. Not amazing anything. I completely misread that word and I'm supposed to be a newsreader. Both but anything over that horrid commercial raisin toast. There are some amazingly good raisin or fruit toasts out there.
Yeah. All right. And finally, Wayne says, fresh sourdough with lashings of butter is one of the great joys of life. It is. Raisin toast is weird and wrong and it is good bread ruined by having rabbit poo baked into it and then screwed up even more by having crap like cinnamon added. Cinnamon is evil. Big red chewing gum. I rest my case. Being made to eat raisin toast is against the Geneva Convention. If you look it up, eating it was punishment for shoplifting in Mongolia until 1975, when the United Nations stepped in and pressured the government into stopping this practice on humanitarian grounds. Bread is a life staple and a wonderful thing. Don't screw it up with raisins and cinnamon-based preservativeness. Mm. And whilst I'm at it, where's my goddamn top fan badge?
Oh, on the Facebook page.
He's lost his top fan badge off Facebook.
Anyone seen Wayne's top fan badge?
Yes. Now, Facebook and Twitter is where you'll find the Friday food poll. And here's where you'll find the results of the Friday food
poll. With Kevin.
Yes. Both got 10%.
Okay.
Okay, so there's 90% left. Even I can do that, Mats. And 45% of that goes to sourdough and the other 45% goes to raisin toast.
What? It's a tie.
Yes, the boats have actually we voted on party lines and the boats who have the balance of power in the Senate don't have it because it's 45-45.
There you go. I thought the way that it was panning out, I thought raisin toast was going to win by a fairly comfortable margin.
A lot of sourdoughs in there. A lot of sourdoughs in there, I think, based on the craze that's going on at the moment where everyone's having a whack at doing it themselves.
Yep.
Yes.
And so make some sourdough and whack some cheese on it, and for all your cheese-making needs, go to Janet.
Absolutely. Cheeselinks.com.au 52821984. Gary Megan is our guest next. Looking forward to this one.
You are listening to Food Bites with Sarah Patterson and Kevin Hillier. Brought to you by Cheeselinks, bringing cheese and yogurt making to your kitchen. Cheeselinks.com.au.
Our guest on Food Bites is a man who's a chef, a restaurateur, an author, a TV presenter, a podcaster, and we'll talk about that. Joining us today is Gary Megan. Hello, Gary.
Hi, Gary.
Hello. Thank you for having me on. Much appreciated.
Oh, we're very pleased to have you on, Gary. We're very keen to know how isolation life is treating you.
We filmed a new series for Channel 7 called Plate of Origin, which was, I think, going to be 30 eps that went to 20, and because of COVID-19 became 10. So I was kind of, you know, wrapped up in that with Matt Preston and Manu Fidel. And then next minute, I'm in ISO with the family. So the joy of it was just peace and quiet and being wrapped up in my own thoughts. But I didn't realize how much I need cafes, restaurants, and a bar. I need a bartender. I need to go and sit at a bar and get the bartender to make me a drink.
Yeah. And I would have pictured too, coffee is a really important component to having a good coffee. Or do you have a great big U-Butte machine at your place?
I've actually, you know what, I've probably got every coffee contraption known to man. And I go through phases. So I've got an old Lanchillo, which is an espresso machine. I need to handle it carefully. You know, it needs a gentle warming up and it takes ages to get a great coffee. And I've got, you know, a pod machine and a French press and, you know, you name it. So I go through little moods where I have, and I even have an instant once in a while.
Shock horror.
I don't know, maybe it's like the lowly chef of years gone by where, you know, we just grab an instant coffee to keep us going. You know, international roast, was that the
thing?
How terrible. And I don't even see it as coffee. I just see it as a beverage, just a hot beverage.
Well,
you know?
The international roast is very common in most radio stations. You'll work in that in the Nescafe Blend 43.
I'm part of it all, I think.
So hang on. So you're very refined and, you know, I guess you've got an articulate palate in many ways and you stick international roast in there?
Yeah, once in a blue moon, 11. And, yeah, I don't mind admitting it.
Is that the problem, do you think, Gary, that many people, and there's so many cooking shows and whatnot, and so much sophisticated looking food on menus that people get a bit intimidated and think that it's not okay just to have simple pleasures?
Yeah, well, I think actually foodies, you know, because we can be a snobby lot if we're not careful. We all assume that everybody's, you know, getting stuck into free range and free roaming and, organic, and that's just not the truth. I mean, when you look at how the average Australian family eats or what they buy or how many recipes that are kind of on speed dial, you know, when they go, right, what's for dinner? You need to remind yourself, especially when you're lucky enough, I suppose, and I would consider myself very lucky to be at the top of the tree and being aware of where my food comes from, and most people aren't. And so I constantly remind myself that, hey, you know, when they do the research, for example, often people go, oh, I cook twice a week or three times a week. And their idea of cooking is very different to mine, for example.
So how fancy do you cook at home under normal circumstances?
You know, I've got a 20-minute rule, you know, at home. It sounds crazy, but, it, you know, as a professional chef in my kitchen at home, I mean, before, you know, ISO took hold, which is, it's always in a hurry, it's always on the go, and it's what I can do quickly and I can do beautifully. If I'm doing a dinner party, I've got a two-hour rule, you know, where I just don't want to be chained to the stove. If you're talking to crazy foodies that often spend the whole day cooking and enjoying, you know, flicking endlessly through recipe books and picking the longest recipe, that's certainly not me.
Do you find you're spending even more time in the kitchen than you otherwise normally would?
Yeah, I think now I've had the pleasure of really slowing down. You know, I've jumped on the sourdough bandwagon. You know, my wife is a reluctant cook. My daughter enjoys good food, but she's a reluctant cook. Mm-hmm. And I've always had this kind of romantic idea that now she's older, certainly my daughter's 19, that we're all pottering around in the kitchen and helping each other to produce this amazing meal. But it's never quite worked out like that. So, you know, this time of being at home, being with the family and not being under any pressure of somebody's got to go out or you've got to do something or you'll be back at the computer or off for a meeting, has kind of really dragged a lot of people back to a different reality, and I quite like it. And I think, you know, Matt Preston even said recently that because we've kind of all turned into our grandmothers or our foodie grandmothers if we had one. You know, we're saving the chicken fat, or we're, you know, worried about what we're throwing in the bin and being a little bit more resourceful and a little bit more creative, and certainly buying more locally, which is, you know, which I'm really pleased to see, you know, as a foodie. I want to see, you know, people think about food, and there's a little saying that if you cook, you care. To translate, that means that, you know, when you're cracking your eggs in a frying pan and watching them cook, you then kind of think, I wonder where they came from. I wonder if they're sustainable. You know, they're kind of important things to be clued into.
Absolutely. I mean, one of my favourite shows recently has been River Cottage Australia, which it's been really interesting for me to look into the background of keeping hens, for example, and what happens to hens once they're too old to lay. And, you know, it's not always pretty, but that's what, that's how it is, and that's where our food comes from. But a lot of people often don't want to face the reality of that.
Yeah, and I think too, you know, we've got more food programming on television. I think actually when you go to the supermarket, in many ways our supermarkets have done a brilliant job, and we've got, you know, stuff that we would have never imagined on our supermarket shelves, you know, 20 years ago. I mean, you can buy, you know, whether it's ginger or lemongrass or, you know, lots of fresh herbs and, I don't know, finger limes, for goodness sake. But, you know, at some level, you know, when you're standing at the meat shelf and you're looking at what sells, you know, it's skinless, boneless chicken thighs or skinless, boneless chicken breast, and there's actually very little variety. I think most people are guilty of not shopping very differently from week to week. We put the same things in a shopping basket and then wonder why we aren't creative. And I think we've certainly lost, I think, more touch, in a sense, with our food than at any other point in history. And I think, you know, there are probably people listening going, no, I don't think that's true. But I think for lots of people, it's very true. We're really disconnected, you know, with how we grow things and the kind of variety of stuff that we eat. Which, you know, gives me a reason to get on my soapbox, I suppose.
Where did your passion for food come from, Gary?
My granddad, who was a chef, was probably doing something that was much more me and much more kind of enjoyable than what I thought I was going to end up doing, which was, you know, an engineer or a draftsman or an architect, which my dad's an engineer or was an engineer. And that's kind of where I was steering my career. You know, I did, you know, chemistry and physics and, you know, technical drawing and stuff like this at school, and was trying to be better at math, even though I sucked. And there was just this realization that I go, hey, you know, my granddad was always very, he was happy. He was working with his hands. He was very connected to community. And what I realized was later on in my life, in my hospitality career, that he was a people person. He was a hospitalitarian. You know, he was connected to the public, his customers. I loved that back then. I just go, what? You can make bread and eat it? Yeah, so it's kind of a realization that that's what I wanted to do. And to be honest, to give my dad his credit, I think he looked at me and went, he's never going to be an engineer. He just doesn't have the patience. He talks too much. He's too impetuous. I think he'd be better in a kitchen. And he actually said to me one day, he said, have you looked into what granddad did as a job? And that kind of got me, that kind of got me going. So yeah, that's where it started.
I don't think we could picture you in as an engineer either. But it's funny you say that, Gary, because given your cooking background, you've certainly transitioned since in terms of going into presenting, hosting, interviewing. How have you found that transition, and is that something you've always been comfortable with?
I certainly love where my career, certainly with MasterChef, because it catapulted, you know, the three of us, George and Matt and myself, into an arena that we hadn't seen on Australian television before that. It kind of made us instantly recognisable and kind of everyday and very familiar. I mean, we've described ourselves, it's a bit like the postman. You know, people just go, hi, Gary, and my wife will go, who's that? I go, I don't know, but hi. It's, you know, when the public know you by your first name, you know, having, you know, we did that for 11 years, yeah. It's really weird. And I think it came at the right time in my life. I think if it happened when I was 25, I would have been terrible at it. I think I would handle it very differently.
You sort of went from the little theatrette in the back of Bourke to Broadway, didn't you, in the space of a very short amount of time?
We kind of did, and we laugh at it because we were really, I mean, I now look at the three MasterChef judges now and I go, you see, that's what they should have got. You know, they are slim and they are gorgeous and they are young and they are well done. And I go, the three of us are really very unlikely. I mean, if you look at the pictures from, I think, 2009 when we first started.
Yep.
I mean, that was ridiculous casting. Whoever was responsible for that, they put a 6'5" man with, you know, Cuban heels on his R&M Williams and put him with two of the shortest, you know, chubbiest guys on telly. We were kind of the unlikely trio. And I know at the time it was refreshing and it was different and we were missing that, you know, kind of television shine. And I think maybe that's what made it special, is we were just kind of everyday and an unexpected success. I wouldn't change it for the world. Even being able to talk to you, you know, today on this podcast, you know, where I talk a little bit about what I do, I just see it as a privilege. It's not work. It's a really lovely thing to do.
They would have been pretty long, grueling days, I would have imagined, in terms of the shooting schedule.
Oh, look, if I'm honest, the transition into television wasn't easy from not from being on TV, but being part of the machinations that are television. There's an old saying, which is hurry up and wait. I kind of pushed and shoved. I think George did too. And I think both of us kind of pushed our elbows out a bit to try and find our space in that environment. And I think there was a point where I just went, you know what? Feet up, hands behind your head, relax and float downstream. And once I got to that realization, I think people went, you know what? You're a real pleasure to work with. And I go, thank you.
And to pare it sort of down now, do we sit in a studio with one person and have a chat and do a plate to call home, which is the podcast that you do for Podcast One, and do so really well. And that's a nice thing too, to be able to sit down and be able to do that on a one-on-one basis like that.
Yeah, I think the way I describe it is that, you know, when you're on television prime time, they tend to be short grabs, and what the podcast is really rewarding, actually. So I look at one of the big pluses of what I do now, or have done for a number of years, is that I'm probably, in terms of food, I love food more now than I ever have. As a chef, it meant one thing. As a restaurateur, it meant another thing. And now as a kind of commentator, it means something entirely different. And it's all pleasure. When I look at what I do now, I just feel very lucky, to be honest, that I have the kind of power to be able to do it, or the pleasure to be able to do it.
Gary, it's obviously, you're no stranger to serving up a lovely dinner, but if you were to have a dream dinner party and you could invite your dream dinner guests, anyone you like, dead or alive, who would be on your list?
Not Genghis Khan. I think that'd be kind of interesting. I'd want to table a conversation and possibly a few arguments. I mean, I grew up in a family where Dad and I actually still argue endlessly about politics and differences of opinion.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, put somebody like Barack Obama. Winston Churchill would be a good one. You know, he's an orator of the English language. I think I'd have him. Who else would I have? Billy Colony, because I think he'd be somebody really to to take the piss out of everything that they were opinionated about. Muhammad Ali, he was a great, you know, I love Muhammad Ali. I grew up, Dad loved boxing. You know, we used to watch it. And I used to think Muhammad Ali, you know, is the greatest. Who else would I have? I think maybe Dad would be invited. I'd have him along because I think, you know, he'd join the conversation of politics and he'd stand his ground too. I mean, he'd give it a go. He used to make me laugh because even when the Jehovah's Witnesses would knock on our door and I'd run away when I was a kid and Dad would just stand out there and debate and we would be shouting at him, Dad, come in. And he goes, what's happening? And he would come in and one of the great things that he gave me was he said, it's important to listen. It's important to understand someone else's position. I think that's a good list. You know, I'd have to kind of scratch my head about what I was going to cook that kind of disparate bunch of people, wouldn't I?
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yes.
Who knows?
Hey, Gary, we've seen you taste an awful lot of stuff on telly. Do you have a sweet tooth? And do you find it, well, as you get older, that you have to modify your diet a little bit?
God. It's just you have no idea of the struggle.
I bet I do.
I give up and try again every day. I have this thing where I go, every day is a new day. Every day I wake up and I go, new day. Oh, you know, where do I start? It's a slippery slope. And I think last year, year before, I lost 10 kilos.
Yeah.
And I felt great. Like I was walking around, I am never, ever going to put that weight back on. Well, all I can say is every day is a new day.
Famous last words.
Now, you mentioned Plate of Origin. We've talked about a plate to call home, so you're busy with that with that podcast. But the television show, when are we going to see it?
There's no date yet. I think it's later on in the year. I mean, I believe it filmed a really great series. I mean, the whole concept of the show, a kind of celebration of our diversity in Australia.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking about cuisine versus cuisine, but it's Greek Australians versus Anglo-Saxon Australians. And I think even as a first series, it's just kind of it's a great idea. It's almost, for me, it's like rewind MasterChef Series 1. It's back to home cooking and back to basics and back to that kind of pride of being really good at what you do, whether it's, you know, old family recipes or discovering a new cuisine that you're just a champion of. And I'm constantly amazed by skills, you know, from different cuisines and how different they are and how inspirational they are. So, you know, it's my thing. It gets me going. But I think it's a great series and a new dynamic with Manu Fidel as our, you know, third judge. And we just got on like a house on fire. It felt beautiful.
Hey, Gary, before we go, I want to ask the contestants on MasterChef, this current series, are all people that you're involved with in your time with the show? Are you watching it with some sort of obviously a different perspective, not being one of the three co-hosts, but are you watching the whole thing with a sort of misty kind of eye about it?
Speaking of misty eyes.
I'm not watching it at all. You know what? And people are saying, I know you. I said, no, I'm not. It's like I'm really excited to talk about my new job and what I'm doing. I'm really excited about the new phase of my life that three of us did it for 11 years and it was time.
Yeah.
And I think we had a bit like that experience that I'm trying to describe, you know, the one-off, the once-in-a-lifetime. Yeah. I think we had one-off, once-in-a-lifetime experiences with those contestants, particularly people like Poe or Reynolds that are very much fixed in my mind then, but also now a friendship that we continue to have that's not associated with MasterChef. So it sounds weird, but no, I don't need to see them have another go.
Yeah.
I saw them have a go and I appreciated it, I loved it, and I've enjoyed what they've done since.
Yeah. No, it's fair enough.
Now, Gary, we normally like to wrap up just by asking our guest, and you would have many kitchen tips or advice to give people, but especially people, I guess, who've just taken up cooking in isolation and wouldn't normally be in the kitchen
so
much.
Get out of the kitchen. No,
well, besides that, what would be a tip for them?
Do you know what? I always tell people, you know, especially reluctant cooks, the first thing you cook or the thing that you cook often should be just the thing that you love to eat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you love a good curry, then that's the first thing that you learn to cook. And, you know, you might be branded the curry guy or the curry gal, but that's okay because that's your little thing. And it could be, that could be anything. It could be risottos. It could be the barbecue. And I think that's kind of the window into enjoying cooking if that's the case. And I think it's the case with kids too, you know, get them to cook something that they can eat, you know, and that they love, and then they want to do it again. And the worst possible thing you can do to a kid, and I think it's the same with an adult, is kind of push them and prod them and poke them around and take over. And it's the same when you're an adult. You know, you don't want to be doing something you don't really want to cook or you don't particularly enjoy. So sounds silly, but, you know, so the first thing you cook is the thing you love.
Yeah. Hey, Gary, thanks so much for your time. Been very generous and very cooperative. We really do appreciate it. We've loved having a chat with you. All the best of luck with A Plate of Origin and A Plate to Call Home.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Cheers.
You are listening to Food Bites with Sarah Patterson and Kevin Hillier, brought to you by Cheeselinks, bringing cheese and yogurt making to your kitchen. Cheeselinks.com.au.
Plate to Call Home is the name of Gary's podcast. Plate of Origin is the forthcoming TV series. And top fan badge, I want one for him because I reckon he's a ripper.
Oh, I so much enjoy that, Kevin. And do you know what? I must admit, before we interviewed Gary, I was a little bit worried that I thought, well, maybe Gary doesn't suffer fools and, you know, foolish is my middle name.
Don't point at me when you say that.
He was so gracious so friendly.
Lovely
and
fella.
I'm an even bigger fan than I was before I started.
Sort of bloke that you'd love to go and say, can we catch up and have a coffee and a, you know, a toasty or something together?
Yeah,
and
at your
place
with your big U-Butte coffee machine.
Yeah, well, your 75 U-Butte coffee machines, you've got one of every variety.
Or maybe just a glass of vino would be even better and a nice big pasta.
You know what, you'd turn up and he'd have his espresso machine over there, his pod machine over there, and he'd say, oh, no, I can't use any of them. Let's have an international roast.
Yeah.
No, see ya. No, gotta go.
Nice knowing you.
All right, let's finish off this week's food bites with a look at some chocolates.
We tried something a little bit different in terms of a visual experiment. Now we put up
going to work really well on this podcast.
We put up a picture on the Facebook page of an assortment of chocolate bars.
Yep.
Most of the usual suspects: your Kit Kats, your Picnics, your Kit Kat Chunky.
You know what it was?
Dairy Milk.
It was the Facebook page version of standing at the checkout at Woolies or Coles and looking at the big range of chocolates that they have there.
And I wanted to see people choose the two that immediately jump out at them without having to think about it too much. Just look at the selection there and
without
if you
looking
had to pick
for what,
two.
Without looking for what's not there, what is there? What do you pick?
And I just thought it was interesting to tally them up and see which were the most popular. And for me,
Let me run through some of the ones that were available for selection. Here they go. Cadbury Dark Nut Block, Dairy Milk Hazelnut, Boost Caramel, Kit Kat Chunky, Aero Milk Chocolate, Whittaker's Peanut Slab, Time Out Flake, Summer Roll, Maltesers, Cherry Ripe Picnic, Cadbury Dairy Milk Block, Turkish Delight and Kit Kat.
What do you think, Kevin?
Me, a straightaway Cherry Ripe. I would grab a Cherry Ripe and then if I had a moment to think about it and was going, yeah, what do I want to go? I would probably then have gone for the big slab of peanut, the Whittaker's peanut slab.
Well, for me, I'm outraged there's no Bounty on there because that's my go-to. I love Bounties. But my second
Bounties
choice.
Are horrible.
Absolutely love them.
They're horrible.
I am a sucker for caramel. I'd go the caramel. I'd probably go a.
Could you only get one caramel? Wouldn't you have to take two or three because they are the most addictive thing going around.
Very, very sweet.
Oh.
That doesn't stop me. And a picnic. I quite like picnics.
Oh, no.
Excuse me.
No. Picnics are like a chocolate bar with acne.
Do you remember the old ad for picnics?
Have
the
a
guy's
break?
The guy's got a. No, that's a Kit Kat.
That's right.
No, the guy's got a mouthful of Peter's a Soldier. From many years ago, and Indians, something like that. And he said,
Yeah. Okay. Turkey. See, now I can't believe let's have a look at the results. So we picked the ones that we would go with.
Yeah, you go. You do it, Kevin.
Kit Kat came first with 7. Now, I like Kit Kats.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah, I do.
Especially the dark. You can get a dark one now.
What is Turkish Delight doing second?
And a close second.
Yeah. Cadbury Dairy Milk Block. Yeah, understand that. That's just your that's your stock standard, never failure kind of chocolate. Grab it and off you go. But Turkish Delight in second. Turkish Delight is, I reckon, the most polarising confectionery you
the
can find.
The mind boggles. And based on the surveys we've done on this podcast.
Turkish Delight is like a sponge.
Well,
like,
more people have said that they don't like it as opposed to do. And it's a real love-hate.
See, summer rolls do nothing for me. I don't even know what they're doing.
Oh, I like those with the coconut on the outside.
No. Flake got nice.
Love a Malteser. Yeah. Love the crunch.
No, I don't like Maltesers. And I don't know if you've noticed.
We have nothing in common.
Maltesers now has its own actual aisle.
Yeah, so it should.
Well, it's now got there's 75 different sorts of Maltese with dark chocolate and light chocolate and things inside it.
And I think people actually use Maltesers to put in cakes and slices and slabs of fudge.
Maltesers, the only thing Maltesers were good for is if the cinema had run out of Jaffers.
You roll them down the aisle.
And you roll them down the aisle. That's all they were good for. Off you go with that. I used to eat the Jaffers and roll the Maltesers.
Kevin, you're showing your age.
There you go. Can't do that anymore. We can't get the pictures, or you can now. Surprisingly, Kit Kat and Turkish Delight, the two at the top of the list there of most popular chocolate bars that just on you have a look and you go, bang, that one.
We might try some more of these little visual tests.
They work very well on podcasts. Yeah, pretty.
It's great idea of mine, that.
If for those of you who can't see it at home, it's in beautiful colour. The screen's it's a 55-inch wide screen with great colour
definition.
Nobody
likes a smart aleck,
and it's really good. You can feel like you have the Kit Kat in your mouth and go, and there's the Kit Kat.
That is theatre of the mind.
That is another edition of Food Bites. With thanks to Janet and the team at Cheeselinks. Don't forget cheeselinks.com.au. The phone number 5282 1984. Our thanks to Gary Megan for joining us. Yep. Good luck to him with a plate to call home and Plate of Origin, which I'm actually
brilliant name for a show, isn't it?
Plate of Origin?
Yeah, and Plate to Call Home.
Very controversial intellectual property around Plate of Origin, but that's all been sorted out, I believe. Next week, you reckon the big names aren't just dropping by to be on this podcast.
They're
because
beating
they,
down a path to our door.
They are a wild and crazy chef. Mm. Probably one of the wildest and craziest, certainly in terms of television presentation.
Yeah.
Anna?
Yep. Polyview.
Polyview is going to join us. She's the dessert queen.
She's wonderful. Absolutely.
We're going to have some fun with her next week right here on Food Bites. We look forward to your company then.
Thanks for listening to Food Bites. Check out our Facebook page and Twitter for recipes, tips and all the latest news. That's Food Bites with Sarah Patterson and Kevin Hillier. Brought to you by Cheeselinks, bringing cheese and yogurt making to your kitchen. All you need to know at cheeselinks.com.au.